It's great to be here, and I usually give short talks and answer a lot of questions, which you'll probably see as I give this talk, that I may be raising some things around meditation that go against some of what many of you have read or been taught, and some of what I say also will go along with it. So I hope that we could just have a very lively, engaged discussion around meditation tonight. The main thing that I would like to just bring out at the beginning is the relationship we have with thinking and meditation. That many times when we're given meditation instructions, we're also given an idea that meditation is a way to get beyond thoughts or to still our minds or to be in a place that's really calm and settled. And I would say that, yes, you know, we do go into calm and settled states. Our mind can get stilled, but it doesn't have to come at the cost of having any aggression or force against your thoughts. The way we treat our minds, the way we treat ourselves in meditation, I think is really essential to how we develop as human beings within our practice and how things are going to unfold as we continue to meditate. The instruction that I sort of left out when I gave you instructions at the beginning was instruction around being gentle to your mind. To really try to practice kindness to the thoughts that are going on in your head rather than trying to stop them and come back to your body or come back to the breath. But by leaving out that instruction, maybe some of you who followed what I said got to see some of your own relationship to your thoughts, which I think is actually much more important to kind of notice at times that perhaps you didn't care for a particular thought or that a certain line of thinking was uncomfortable or unpleasant or another line of thought, maybe a particular fantasy, was very delightful and enjoyable. And to really kind of see, well, how were you with the different kinds of thoughts you had? Instead of having a blanket relationship with all of your thinking, it's like trying to have the same kind of feeling with a person that's close to you. You're going to go through different feelings, and you're going to shift and change according to what you're presented with. And so that's what this approach really is about, is not trying to control our experience in such a way that we're always kind or equanimous or not caught up in our thinking. Instead, my approach, my way of looking at it, is to just be more realistic, that our mind in meditation is much like our mind outside of meditation. We will get caught up in thinking. We will get upset with some of the things we don't like. We will go through different things, and to really, instead of saying, well, that's a problem with me or a problem with meditation, what if that is what meditation can be about? How you sit with that, how you stay with your experience of your mind within meditation, how you are with yourself going through the different things that come up for you while you sit, the different sounds you hear, the rehashing of conversations, the looking forward to different conversations you have, the kind of monologue or narration that goes on in your mind while you're meditating. And we all have that. You know, I think even the most advanced meditators probably have a high percentage of thinking about things going on in their sittings. My practice, many people I've known have been practicing many years, have had to make peace with their thoughts rather than always feel they must get beyond them. And that peace with your thinking makes it so that there is really less inner conflict and struggle in your meditation practice. Because what I think, or what I've seen happens, I believe, inadvertently, is that if we're just given an instruction to bring our attention back to the breath whenever our mind wanders, or to note a thought that's thinking, and come back to a primary object, that we are, in a way, setting up a situation where thinking isn't allowed to go on, and that there's something wrong in thinking too much, and that there's a way in which I think we're also being a bit hard on ourselves, that we might find that we are opening a door for additional self-criticism and harshness around our inner experience. But that's, of course, never the intent. You know, it's all how we, I believe, may take things in, take in certain instructions and practices. And that's the basis from my book, Unlearning Meditation, which I wrote several years ago, which was really about looking at the habits of mind that we've developed in our meditation practice that have gone on that may just not be working for us so much. You know, they may have worked at the beginning of our practice, but after a while we find they're making us you know, be a bit rigid or intolerant or pressured. And so this approach of allowing thinking into your sitting and allowing more emotions to really sit with those experiences, for many people, it can also be an experience of really letting go, letting yourself, in a sense, just be with whatever it is you're experiencing without trying to control it or judge it or make it into something else, which sounds wonderful. But if you noticed, when you were sitting, if some of you sat with the instruction around allowing thinking, that if you're going to be honest with yourself, there's resistance to it. There's a way in which many of us who've been practicing meditation may only want our thinking or let our thinking be there until it dies down. We make a kind of bargain with it and basically say, I'll let it go on or let myself think about this until it goes away. Or we feel that you know, our thinking is just something which is too much for us. We get overwhelmed by it. We feel attacked by it. And in that way, I think, can also feel a bit unkind around it, like, this is too much for me to sit with, or it's going on too long, and maybe I should stop it and go do something else. And I think that's a natural experience. And when I say, you know, that it's natural not to want to think and not want to think about certain things while we meditate. It's also, I believe, a way in which it's much better to notice that you're resisting than to be harsh with yourself for thinking. You know, if you just kind of consider it, that you just notice that you might not like it, or it might be taking up your time, or it might be uncomfortable. But that sure is a lot better than trying to stop it all the time and get myself to, or get this particular voice just to shut up or calm down or get out of the way. So this whole approach around being aware of thinking is not an approach just to have your sittings filled with thought. In fact, what you might have find is that if you have less conflict with your thinking, you might actually have less thought. You might find that your mind actually can settle down because there isn't something that's going on that's kind of getting you to fight it or to try to push past it. But this is something that we would see for ourselves. I mean, I could say that would happen, but you have to see it for yourself. The thing with this kind of approach, too, sometimes you might feel, well, if I allow certain thoughts to go on, I'm just going to make things worse. We often have heard that, you know, if I keep thinking angry thoughts, I'm just going to get angrier. If I keep having all these fantasies, they're just going to go on and on. Try it. Sit and meditate and see what happens if you do let yourself have some angry thoughts but are gentle and kind to yourself while that's going on. Or if you have certain fantasies and you actually have more compassion and understanding for what you're going through and what that's about. And you might find that you're just not having a single experience of being angry or upset. Something else is going on around it. There's a kind of container, kind of way of being. And that's what we, I believe, can start to focus on. We can start to see that it's not what we're thinking. It's not the angry thoughts or the monologue or the revenge scenarios that we're pursuing. It's how we're sitting there with them. That's really the change. That's what we're developing. And that, to me, is a rising of good, wholesome qualities. Rather than trying to think in terms of, well, I need to counter my anger with some thoughts of kindness or loving kindness, which is a good practice and does work at times. But to also consider that you're practicing loving kindness if you're able to really just sit and listen to that angry voice and take it in and feel that, yes, it does deserve to be there. There's energy behind it. There's feeling behind it. Some things have gone on. How can I actually be receptive to this and listen to it and develop some compassion around it? And that is going to be part of what starts to develop inside of you as you're able to stay with these kinds of thoughts. Another side to this is that nobody, I believe, is really meditating to indulge in angry thoughts or indulge in certain fantasies. In fact, you know, that's probably not the idea. You know, like, we are aware of that. So we don't need to micromanage it, you know, which I believe does tend to happen in our practice, that we may feel we need to really get in there and try to change what it is we're thinking or have some strategy to get past it, instead of saying, well, maybe my relationship to my thinking, if it is a calmer, friendlier relationship, that will change it. That will have some effect. And if I'm interested in it, because this is the other side that I also didn't mention my instructions, is to really consider, well, if I'm just looking at my thoughts to drift away, if I'm just looking for things to pass by so I don't have to go into them, well, is that developing, you know, what I think it's developing sometimes is a kind of apathy, a kind of disinterest, a way in which I don't want to really know this. But if you're interested, you might find that interest is something that really counters our aversion. You know, whenever you're interested in what somebody else has to say or interested in a topic, you might find whatever resistance you had to it, you might actually get past that much more easily and find that this is worth staying with. So just consider, if you're a little bit interested, not just in what you're thinking about, but in your experience of thinking, you know, what is this experience like? You know, I'm thinking about what happened during the day, and I'm picturing people at work, and I'm rehashing a particular dialogue. Well, those are the thoughts, but what are you also feeling around that? What's your full experience around that? And you might find that that could actually lead to some interesting memories and reflections, to thinking that I think many of us would consider to be slightly more productive or better or wholesome. And that's, you know, another side to this. I don't believe in meditation practice as something which always has to get to a place where thoughts dissolve and vanish and then you're suddenly calm and peaceful. A good deal of insights come about through more, you know, critical thought, more discriminating thought, higher kinds of thinking that we know historically has been in, you know, Buddhist practice and practice in other traditions. I mean, we all enjoy reading books that have a great deal of wisdom presented in them. We may think that that wisdom is coming from some particular state that the person has reached. But what if that's also a faculty of being able to think more clearly about your experience, to contemplate it more thoroughly? And I'm just putting that out there because if we look at all thinking as bad or not useful in meditation practice, then what are we actually left with? Because we are going to be thinking in so many situations and doing various things, making decisions upon those thoughts. Maybe there's certain kinds of thinking we need to be able to trust. So this approach that I'm also teaching, for some of you who are aware of Buddhist practices, really is an awareness of different types of thinking, you know, at its base. And the reason that I start with instructions around allowing thoughts into sitting and developing greater capacity to be with different kinds of thoughts is so that as people progress in meditation, continue to meditate, thinking doesn't turn into an enemy. It doesn't turn into something that's an adversary in your practice. And it doesn't turn into something which you then criticize yourself for, you feel down about, or you feel frustrated about. Instead, it's a part of your experience, just like hearing is, touch, taste, all the other senses. The way that this works, too, is rather than trying to notice thinking in the present moment, Because this is what often gets taught is, you know, just notice that you're thinking something right while you're thinking it. What you'll find is that if you do that, you'll be continually interrupting your thoughts. You'll be stopping your thinking midstream, and you won't know where it goes. You won't have any sense of that, and this is something you can also experiment with, or some of you already know this, perhaps, is that you might not be aware of why you're thinking a certain thought at the beginning until you've let it progress a certain ways, and then you get a sense, I know why I'm thinking this thought, because of where it has led. You actually need to let some of your thinking go further to know kind of, well, what's keeping this going, and where is this going? This kind of approach to allowing thinking, is, how to put it, the idea here is more to become aware of it and not to try to get beyond it prematurely, not to try to stop it before you actually have some capacity to know what it reveals, what your thoughts are telling you. The recollecting is really important in this, because if you can't notice something in the moment, if you keep stopping it, then the place where you're going to be able to be more skilled at noticing something is after the fact. And my experience in working with people is that recollecting your thoughts and going through things that you've experienced in meditation actually helps you become more aware of those experiences, so that when you meditate again, there's a greater familiarity. And it's especially important with thinking, because your thinking will keep popping up at different points in the sitting. You might follow the same theme sometimes, you might go off different themes. When you recollect a meditation sitting, you may start to find certain things that really have drawn your attention, certain emotions that have come up and gone. You might get a much better sense of the various dimensions of your experience. And so that's what this recollecting is more about. And the last thing I want to say about this is that, before I get into questions, I have quite a bit to answer, I believe, is that in this kind of work of recollecting, we're not going to remember everything. We're just going to remember a few things, and not to, create added stress or pressure on trying to remember what happens in your sitting. The truth is that we're not used to talking about what goes on in meditation sittings. We don't have an adequate language for it. Many people, when they are given instructions or given words, labels to, use on their experience, or given various ideas about like the proper language or the meaning of certain experiences, but to really just talk about it just as you would to a friend, or write down in a journal, that's not often done. And so this approach to meditation, which is called recollective awareness, really relies on people being willing to give more full descriptions of their experience, to go past some of the labels that we usually use, and to say more. So if somebody usually just keeps saying that they're experiencing anger, to look at, well, is it really anger? Is it hatred? Or is it contempt, resentment? And then, what was that experience like? What was that internal dialogue you had with somebody? What was said in it? What did it feel like? To go further into it. Because when you start to describe your experiences, you'll find that you're exploring them more, and you're actually getting closer to them. That the notion of labeling may give some immediate closeness, especially if you haven't used the label before, but after time, it serves to distance. And it also serves, in a way, to pass over, rather than to get to know your experience much more intimately. So that's a main feature of this approach. And I could go on, but I just want to open this up now for any questions you might have.
Thank you. There's a lot of juicy stuff in there. To the best of your ability and words, and from your own experience, what is it that is practicing the recollective awareness, letting the thoughts go, and then afterwards looking back and seeing what happened.
Okay. Let me put it out this way. I think any practice we do, any meditation practice we do, even if it's stated with the concept that there's no self, there becomes a meditator self in the practice. That there is a way that whatever kind of activity we're engaged in, we will start to identify it and develop a certain kind of way of doing things, a sense of who that is and what that is. The way I look at it is more to reflect back and to start to notice that, to take a look at the practice you're doing, the kind of identity you have with your practice, and to include that, you know, within some of the journaling and some of the descriptions around your experience. I think there's a way in which we might find that the meditator self, or the person that the part of us that's meditating, whether it's an observer or witness, lives in a privileged place that often we don't reflect back on and look at.
What do you mean, lives in a privileged place?
I mean, lives in a place of kind of calling the shots, you know, being the authority, being in a place that we listen to and let inform us, rather than a place that we can kind of reflect back on and say, well, sounds good, but I don't quite agree with it, or I want to know more about it. I want to look at these ideas.
Let me see if I can get the other mic.
I guess my question would be something like, have I got it? Okay. My question is, do you think all the time, or how do you decide when you'll be thinking and when you'll be sensation or whatever else there is that you're going to pay attention to? Do you just trust that your awareness is going to move to what's...
That's a good point. Yes, you trust. Okay, like say many of you have done practices of being aware of the breath or the body. And you've done that practice several times, you know, for years, some of you. You can, I believe, trust that your attention will go back to your body, go back to your breath quite naturally during the meditation sitting. That skill has been established. And that allowing your thoughts to go on is also, I believe, you know, it's a part of experience around it, is you will notice that they will, trail off or get wispy, or, you know, that your attention will go back to the body quite of its own, that different experiences will follow. And that, to me, this kind of approach to meditation actually opens up to a wide range of inner states. You know, that it's not about getting to a specific state of mind, but, you know, letting yourself go into other states, like when I said in instruction, you could let yourself go towards sleep. You know, allowing thinking, allowing feeling to come up in your sitting, and allowing sleepiness will open up, I think, to a greater variety of experience within meditation.
So are you saying that in the meditation, you're allowing the experience, you're not trying to control it? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's just checking.
Yes. But you see, there's a trick there. You know, if you try to allow, your experience or put a certain kind of effort into it, you'll find that you're controlling it to be open in a certain way.
Yeah.
So this is really much more radical. You're just sitting down with whatever is on your mind, whatever coming up, and letting that carry you right into the sitting.
Right, yeah, because I experienced that this week. I just decided, well, I'm just going to wait a while. And then it surprised me that I didn't get more and more intensely involved with my thoughts, but I did drift into other states. Wow. Oh. Yes. Kind of surprised me. So this is what you're talking about, I guess.
Exactly.
Just allowing that and not trying to make it be a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
At least starting from that place, you know.
So following up on that, I do very much the same thing, but I find that I can weave a whole story. So if I were more interested in practicing your type of method, would it be actually trying to focus on one of those stories, so to speak, or after I meditate, journaling on one of those thoughts? Because I'm pretty amazed at how this story can get bigger and bigger, and then I forget that story and a new one comes up.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay. That's the thing, is say you can't go into all the different stories that are coming up, you know, or that everything that's going on. But you may find that there's certain stories that kind of hold a bit more interest or a bit more traction, you know, that they're bringing up things for you, and to let yourself go into them. When we meditate, you know, there's going to be a lot of repetition. We're going to have the same ideas, the same thoughts, feelings come up again and again in the sitting. You know, instead of thinking that repetition is a bad thing or it's a failure, you know, instead to look at, well, repetition is maybe something's trying to be said here, something's trying to come up, I'm not quite able to get it. And to let yourself kind of go back into things again and again, as much as we might not want to, because some of what you might notice is some of the repetition are things that maybe you don't want to think about, or a relationship that's really difficult, or something that seems very frustrating or limiting. And to really consider, well, if I let myself go into it, is it possible while meditating, being still, having a greater capacity or interest in it, to be aware of it, will it go somewhere else? And that's another side to this is, it's not about like I said earlier about trying to be aware of thoughts in the present moment, where you're trying to notice, you know, exactly what's going on each time. This is more, you're letting your thinking go on, and slowly you're picking up on things. You know, so you're in it for a while, and then you might also be a little bit out, and in it, and a little bit out, and you find, you know, you're just slowly picking up. This is what I'm drawn to. This is what my mind seems to be building here. And you start to find that can actually be quite engaging and insightful.
Hi, so when you're talking about the place of thinking in meditation, you refer to meditation in sort of the general or maybe the abstract, and it's kind of implied that thinking is a distraction of the object of our meditation. But wouldn't it be really to corroborate with some of your claims to say that, like in the suttas, they're described mindfulness of emotions and mindfulness of mental qualities, and those would essentially be meditations where our thoughts are themselves the object of meditation. So it's not even, you know, inherent that thoughts are distractions from meditation, but they can actually be important to the meditation. It's meditation itself, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So the thing is why not start there? See, part of the real difference is traditionally we've started with awareness of the body and have hoped that will bring about awareness of feeling and mental states and thoughts. Instead of, well, what if we start with more openness towards thoughts and emotions and see where that will go with a grounding in the body? And that's why I gave the instruction of bring your attention back to the touch of your hands or just your body sitting still, because the grounding of your body, just being still in the sitting, is much easier to be with and allow thoughts to go on than being aware of the breath. Because the breath is moving and changing, and it often is very hard for us to have awareness of thinking and the breathing at the same time, but with the body, especially the lower part of the body, it's easier.
Can you... When I think of my own experience, whether it's, you know, paying attention to the breath or paying attention to the body, that the part of the practice is finding a balance there and finding a balance between letting be, yet you're adding a little bit of energy and interest and finding that balance. So when you talk about paying attention to thoughts, are there ways that you would describe how you sort of find that balance between letting them go, yet not necessarily feeding the fire and maybe taking them somewhere, yet also being aware of them?
Okay. This is the thing around it is, if we've done practices where we've stopped our thoughts a lot and we've been really kind of managing and coming back to the breath, then I believe actually we need to do a kind of overcorrection and really let our thinking go on a bit more. This is what I experience. I mean, it's and what I've worked with various people is that if you try to find that balance you're seeking around thinking, what I've seen happen often in it is that you only allow the thinking to go on so much. There's only certain, you still have a kind of exclusion around certain types of thought. There's still a way in which thinking can't quite enter into your sitting as it would normally. And so that's my only reservation around that. But after overcorrecting, you may find that you do come more to a balance. Just like being aware of the breath is an overcorrection around how we are normally aware of things. You'll start to find that that's actually what you've done. You've gone so far into a direction of being aware of your body to the exclusion of everything else that it's provided a certain kind of certain types of special experiences, a certain way of just being with that. But I believe that, of course, would need to slide back over to awareness of the other foundations of mindfulness.
Jason, could you speak about the role of dullness in meditation? I've been exploring your suggestion to really examine the label.
Oh, yeah.
And sleepiness, I think, gets over-applied. And really going into what seems initially to be sleepiness and paying attention to it can be quite rich. And I think the role of that realm of mind states in meditation, I think, is considered somewhat punitively by traditional Vipassana meditation teachers, and I was wondering what you could say about dullness in meditation.
Okay. I think for many people, when you start to get relaxed, start to get sleepy, and that you might find that just being relaxed, especially in an open meditation practice like this, you might actually drift off more, go more towards sleep at times. And if you don't try to bring yourself awake, you may find that you actually don't really fall asleep all that much. You get close, but you come back, and you find that different states of mind can emerge out of that experience. But the thing, too, is that in those states, you might have a poor recall of the experience, a low level of awareness. So when coming out of them, you may recollect and get a sense, well, what is it like being sleepy? Or what was the state like? What kinds of things did I, what did it feel like? Floaty, watery, heavy, you know, with what kind of things were going on? Were my thoughts, you know, more nonsensical, whimsical? Did I have visual images or not? You may notice that there are a variety of different things going on that you can maybe pull back, and that's very useful. And just generally around states of mind is that any state of mind that we go into, we can have, unless we're completely unconscious, we have a modicum of awareness. You know, if we can remember it, we can, in a sense, notice a bit more about it. And to me, that's more, a much more useful notion around mindfulness than trying to have a kind of optimal state that you're going to be able to be in to notice everything clearly. That, you know, you can't notice a dull state all that clearly, you know? You might not be even notice certain, you know, states like ill will all that clearly. But you may find when you come out and you reflect back, there are some things that can come back to mind, and you can know that experience much more, you know, from another vantage point than when you're in it. And that's, you know, because the other option is that you always break these states. You always wake yourself up when you're getting sleepy. You always stop yourself when you're getting upset. And you notice it from that vantage point, but you notice it, I believe, in a place of having interrupted it instead of seeing how it naturally forms and what it's actually like, you know, when you're not so much, not being really mindful and more like you are during the day. Okay.
I think I've heard everything you've said. I think it's absolutely fascinating. And I also am wondering if there's anything to be said with this approach as far as the empty mind or emptying the mind, or is there a goal, is there any kind of a goal of getting beyond our thoughts or our everyday mind to that place of what I would call higher mind, or some people would say cosmic consciousness, or is there anything to be said in this approach for that?
That such experiences can also arise without trying to make them happen. You know, that people will go into some of those states and have those experiences doing an open meditation practice like this. But they're not sought after, in a sense. You start to see that they're coming about through various conditions. They're rising more of on their own instead of from doing a particular practice to generate them. And along those lines, what I've seen working with people over the years is that if people have had, you know, particular experiences meditating in a more structured, formal way, when they move to a more open, unstructured practice, it may take a little while, but they come back around to those experiences. You know, it's like you don't necessarily lose whatever kind of spacious, calm, empty states of mind you had. You just may find you come around to them in another way. They more or less arise within you rather than coming about through a particular practice you're doing.
Yes. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
So maybe I'll just jump in here for a few moments. Most of what you say, I have complete agreement with, and have a very similar approach as far as not making thoughts the enemy. In fact, when Janet mentioned that's the name of your book, and I said, "Oh, that's a phrase I've been using for decades," and I remember when I really appreciate that, and I remember when I first started practicing, I had this notion that if I was doing it right, there'd be like this giant vacuum cleaner that would just come and suck them all out, and I'd be blank. And I often tell people, don't wait for that to happen, because that's not. Not only is it going to be frustrating, it's not our regular experience, and although that can happen where the mind can get very blank, very clear and very spacious, but it doesn't happen because you're trying to make it happen, or rarely. You can develop some concentration where that can happen, but typically in most sittings that doesn't happen. And so my attitude has been just to see thought as another arising of phenomena, just as the eye sees and the ear hears and the mind thinks, and that as long as there's not a problem or a struggle or thinking that one needs to get rid of anything, then you're eliminating an awful lot of extra extra energy and contraction. So that I'm with you all the way. And I also agree that when certain thoughts persist, that there is there are feelings underneath that are fueling them. And so it can be very useful to just notice, oh, what am I feeling right now? And I also agree that sometimes when something, you have a very profound new way of seeing something, and it rocks you to just not pay attention because it's just the mental element, and oh well, that's just a thought, so I'd better not go there, can also be a disservice to the mind, because when the mind is very spacious, often we see things in a new way, not because we're trying to think them through, but because insights arise out of that spaciousness. And when somebody says that to me, you know, I just was rocked, and oh my God, and do I just let it go? And I'll suggest, no, to judiciously let that insight really register. And when it's, as long as it's a new perspective, that can be very rich. When you start to replay it from the 87th angle, that really did happen in junior high, and yeah, she did really say that, and you're saying it over and over, and it's old news, it seems to me that that's going a little bit overboard for my taste. So here's where I have some question or wonder. For me, the power of mindfulness, of seeing clearly what's actually here right now, other than mental, other than thought, is you see the emptiness of most of the content of our thoughts, seeing that thoughts are as real as we take them to be, or as real as we believe them to be, or as empty as we see them to be. And it can be a very tricky thing to... we're so hooked on our thoughts most of the time anyway that it takes a radical shift of perspective to see this is just a mental fabrication that has come through at this moment. And most of, I somehow remember some survey that said most of what we think from one day to another day, like a huge percentage, is just repetition of whatever themes that are going around in our mind or whatever we're interacting with. And if somebody hooked it up to loudspeakers and made you listen, it would be like cruel and inhuman punishment. Not that there's not rich material in there, but a lot of it is just random stuff. And so for me, the power of seeing this is just a mental fabrication is tremendously freeing, and then there can be some discernment between this is a thought that I want to give energy to, and this is a thought I can just let fly by. And I love the Tibetan approach, which is a very big part of my practice, not that it's because it's Tibetan approach, but the way they describe it, that when I'm sitting here and the thoughts are arising, these days, very few thoughts activate me. I can get into thoughts, for sure, But when I don't mess with them, when I just see them as, oh, this is thought, just like this is a sound, thoughts self-liberate. I love that term from the Tibetan teachings. They just self-liberate. They just unravel on their own when I'm not engaging in them. And I wonder, is there some kind of negative tendency to get engaged in the thoughts and not see the emptiness of them when you're doing it more in the style that you described?
I think the main difference here is actually a bit of a shift around receptivity, and that what I'm looking at with thoughts and meditation and working with thoughts is being with them long enough and in certain ways where the resistance, the hatred or aversion to them go away. One can actually be interested in them, go through some real discerning around, say, the reality or the credibility or the value of some of those narratives, and come to a place where there is an actual really seeing the dependently risen nature, the constructed or fabricated nature of that experience, and it dropping away. But it's a longer process, rather than a process where you're going into the experience more with a, for lack of a better word, like almost a template of, you know, they're empty or they're no self or something like that. Even if you've come up to the template from your own experience, I find like I have to keep going back to the beginning. It has to be fresh to me to want to investigate it.
I'm not sure I followed. So in the way that I describe, you're saying there's an overlay of a template of thoughts are empty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What if it's an actual understanding? It's not a
template. That's what I meant in my second statement, is that even if it is an actual understanding, that actual understanding can then turn into a kind of template that one brings to one's experience again and again, rather than treating each arising of those thought fabrications as a fresh experience of that. So that's, I think, the difference. I mean, when I look at being interested, to me, being interested in something, say, that happened years ago that keeps cropping up, it's not about resolving it or getting to the end of it. It's about open-ended investigation around what keeps that fire burning and how does it keep coming up in different forms and what's it really doing, and that I can keep seeing its constructed, conditioned nature, but maybe I'm limited and I can't see enough of it for me to really come to that understanding fully around that thought process. So I'm looking at a longer, kind of like more gradual process around that.
Yes, if something keeps arising from my past, there is some information, some useful information to explore. Okay, what is going on here? What's the feeling underneath? And there can be some value to some reflection, but so much of the thought, the content is just banal. Empty and not significant.
Well, right, but that's the thing, that certain kinds of thoughts, certain states of mind, that you're thinking may be such where it's fragmented or it's nonsensical or it just doesn't go anywhere. And you might find, well, you know, you're not necessarily looking there at something that's so much about your conceptualization, the way you narrate the world to yourself and the way you go about things in your relationships. You might just be seeing that there's this particular thought about something that from a movie you saw, or a strange image comes to mind, or something like that. That's really much different than, you know, it's more like a sense impression than the kinds of thoughts that keep churning and keep producing more actions and more conversations and more stuff, you know, which is what most of us are actually dealing with and want to get past. I mean, that's part of our dukkha, is essentially the repetition of a variety of things that somehow, even if they, if the thought subsides for a while, the mere fact that it comes back again may mean that there's something more there.
Yeah, if it comes back again, but so much of it is just a papancha of one thing going to another, going to another, going to another. Mm-hmm. And I've taken 10 different trains, and I'm still on my journey.
Right. That's why what I'm saying is, you say you take the 10 different trains in meditation and reflect back on it and look back at those trains. You're going to learn something else about those trains or be familiar with them a certain way that when they come back again, I believe there'll be a particular kind of mindfulness awareness around it. See, this is another thing about the nature of awareness, that what I'm talking about here is not traditional mindfulness of deciding or training yourself to notice something moment to moment. What I'm talking about here is that by letting yourself go through certain thoughts and feelings in the meditation sitting and reflecting back on them, you're producing another level, another layer of awareness around that experience. And when you go and meditate again, that familiarity is going to make you kind of like a little bit more aware, mindful of that experience as it's going on without trying to change it or tamper with it or correct it, things like that.
And you've seen people have as come to the seeing the emptiness of thoughts in the same way as it would in more typical practices,
yeah. But then the emptiness is not just impermanence or vanishing of thoughts. It's the emptiness around seeing that our thoughts are held together by certain memories and intentions and stories and all sorts of things, and that's what goes, the more of that glue.
Yeah, another. Just we have time for maybe two, and then we'll go. Really short.
Okay. Quick question then. So in the practice that we just did, I was thinking, and then I became aware that I was thinking. What would be your direction or guidance at that moment? Continue with the thought, but be aware that I'm thinking that thought, or to stop?
Well, that's a good question, because what happens is new things move into the foreground. So you might find that you're aware that you're thinking the thought and that there's a certain voice in that narrator, or, you know, and that around what you're aware of. And so you might find you shift a little bit to that as well. And you might find that you're shifting quite a bit in your object. That's the nature of a open meditation practice, is that, you know, it's without primary object. So it's really flexible, and you start to find you're kind of making choices to notice the next thing that's come more to the foreground. And there's no rule around it.
One last one quickly.
Sometimes when I come here, I want to rest my mind from life. In a way, I guess I look at it as kind of a pause in life. It's like my life is out here and I'm in here. And I want to ask, do you take a pause, any pauses in your meditation? I mean, do you go to your breath, you know, between your thoughts?
Well, what happens?
I guess I also would like to kind of know, when you sit, is there a procedure, a process that you do?
Okay, I really don't talk much about my own experience, but people I work with, and I'll just say a little bit about that, is basically, just sitting and starting with whatever I'm carrying with me that's coming into the sitting. So without a strong boundary that's created in the sitting, so there's no kind of opening chant or intentions or anything like that. It's just sitting down and whatever one was thinking about or feeling before comes in. And one of the main reasons for that is because when that boundary is broken down, more of your life comes into your sitting. You know, it's just quite natural. And then more of your sitting can come into your life through the other way. And the thing is that I find that since I shifted to this way of meditating, which was over 20 years ago, basically my sittings have been actually stiller and calmer and more periods of less thinking. But also when there are periods of much more thinking, there's a different way of being able to be with that, which I truly value.
Thank you. And thank I you. Really do appreciate the emphasis on no struggle. That's, for me, I completely agree, is the main obstacle to inner peace. You don't have to struggle. The thoughts are not the enemy. Mind is not the enemy. And just being open to how things are and seeing clearly in a very, my instructions are a relaxed, interested, and kind awareness. Those are the three components for me. So I think we have a lot of alignment in that. So thank you very much for coming here and sharing approach that's obviously touched a lot of people. And I know Janet, who I respect so much, has had a major shift in their practice, and I appreciate what you're putting out there. So thank you. So we'll just close with a short loving kindness. And just connect with what your experience is right now, and bring a kindness to the mind, the body, and the heart, and wish yourself well. May I see clearly and connect with all the wholesomeness inside. And may I share my love well. And may our coming here together be of benefit to everyone here and ripple out to benefit all beings everywhere. May all know inner peace. May all know love and kindness. May all know the highest happiness. So, thank you very much. Have a great week. See you next week. Thanks again, Jason.